Our next guest is an independent economist. He's Vice Chancellor's Fellow at the University of Tasmania. Saul Eslake, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you for having me on your program again.
Well, thanks for joining us. So most state governments have said we can only have a modest increase in the minimum wage, but the Victorian government says we need a big increase. Do you think right now we can afford that?
Well, I wouldn't begrudge people on the minimum wage an increase in line with inflation over the past year, which would be about 4%. I think that would be reasonable. And since businesses have been putting up their prices by an average of 4%, that's what the CPI is telling us, then they ought to be able to afford that. Obviously, it will be a cost, but it's one that I think businesses in general should be able to absorb. I think it's a bit of a cop-out for the Victorian government to say that they advocate a substantial increase without putting a number on it, so that people can have some idea of what substantial means. I think it would be wrong in current circumstances for the Fair Work Commission to award an increase that did more than compensate people on the minimum wage for the impact on them of the rise in the consumer price index over the last 12 months or four quarters, because that almost certainly would feed through into higher inflation. And although that wouldn't necessarily mean that the Reserve Bank would raise interest rates, it could well mean that they take longer to start lowering interest rates than financial markets and everybody else expects.
And of course, you end up with what we had in the 70s and the 80s, the so-called wage price spiral. So prices go up, wages go up as a response. Businesses say, my costs have gone up, I'll have to raise prices further, and on it goes.
Well, I think we're some way away from being in that situation where the numbers we would have been talking about for increases in both prices and wages were approaching or sometimes exceeding 10%. And of course, back then, unions were in a much more powerful position, A, because they had a larger share of the workforce's members, and B, because the industrial relations laws were much kinder to unions taking, for example, strike action than they are today. So I'm not sure that that's a significant risk, but the Reserve Bank has been quite clear in saying that if wages growth were to exceed their forecasts of about 3.5% to 4% and productivity weren't to return to its long-run average of about 2%, then that would almost certainly result in more persistent inflation, especially of services, and that would in turn have consequences for the outlook for interest rates.
Now, the other thing is the state government. Would the state government even employ many people on the minimum wage? I actually wouldn't have thought so.
No. Public sector workers are on average paid a bit more than private sector workers these days. And in state government jobs, that's likely to remain the case. So, no, the people on minimum wages are typically in aged care, in retail, and in hospitality and accommodation services. So they're mostly private sector or not-for-profit sector employees.
And finally, there's this push by the ACTU, and it's only a proposal at the moment, to say, well, instead of having 4 weeks annual leave at full pay, you could have 8 weeks at half pay, which on the surface seems reasonable, except that a business would have to employ a replacement worker for twice as long and would have to pay them the full-time wage. Do you think that's a good idea, 8 weeks at half pay versus 4 weeks at full pay?
I don't think it's a bad idea if employers and employees want to negotiate that between themselves. And it's quite common for businesses to negotiate flexible arrangements, not just for annual leave, but for people with, for example, caring responsibilities who have to pick up children or something like that after school or take them to school. It's not uncommon for businesses to negotiate with their employees in ways that offer benefits to both of them. And I can imagine circumstances where it might well be something that makes employees more motivated and therefore bosses more satisfied with their performance on the job without necessarily costing them any more. I mean, it's not always the case that when someone takes annual leave, the company, the employer, has to hire someone else to do their job. You know, people are taking annual leave at all sorts of different times, and businesses and government employers manage to cope with that. But if it were to be made mandatory, then I think that would be a much more problematic thing and not desirable.
Yes, and that's where we just haven't got a firm answer yet from the ACTU. Is this just something that you suggest might be a good idea for each business to arrange with its own workers, or does it become mandatory? We'll leave it there. Saul Eslake, Independent Economist and Vice-Chancellor's Fellow at the University of Tasmania, thank you for your time.